Today on Wings, stories about the gift economy.
Actions that we do for our communities is what makes the rest of the world run and pretend that, you know, everything is for sale. But there is this whole hidden part that make it possible for anyone to sell anything.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
On April 24, 2021, two well-known activists came together online to tell stories about the gift economy, which is the source of value unrecognized in the world's economic calculus. Medea Benjamin is from the United States. She co-founded both the women-led peace group Code Pink and the human rights group Global Exchange. She has authored 10 books, among them Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control. Kumba Touré grew up in both Mali and Senegal. She belongs to the African Feminist Forum, chairs the board of Trust Africa, and co-coordinates Africans Rising for Justice, Peace, and Dignity. She's an artist and storyteller and designs popular education programs. Kumba and Medea have known each other for a long time. Both are now mothers. The event at which they spoke is from the series Maternal Gift Economy Breaking Through. Here are some of their stories.
Gift economy is something that I've experienced all my life. I've received so much and from so many. I remember coming to the U.S. In 1997 in San Francisco as a young person doing an internship at Global Exchange. And Medea Benjamin here and her family got their daughter out of her room and gave me, you know, the young daughter. Of course, she was happy to to go with her parents at that time. But just the symbolism of this, and I stayed there for free. This young woman from Senegal that, you know, you have only, I guess, philosophical connection with. To be able to make that gift of hosting, and did my internship, and it's something that changed and transformed my life. And Medea is exceptional, of course, we know that. But I also want to say that it is not an exception in the activist community. Right before that, the year before was my first trip to the US, 1996. We came from Mali, and it was 22 of us on a study tour on African identity. And we wanted to know about the life of Africans outside of Africa, African diasporas. And we went to Selma, Alabama. And the moment we landed in Atlanta, we were welcomed by communities and people all the way, Georgia, Alabama, North and South Carolina, Louisiana, Tennessee, Mississippi. 22 of us, the only money that we had that was the Institute for Popular Education was really our tickets to get to the US at that time. And we were cared for. You know, this is extraordinary, you know, and it happens all the time. And it goes unsaid. It's in nobody's report or proposal or anything. If I don't tell you this story, nobody would ever know that people gave us their food, churches cooked for us, university students, everything as we went on these studies. And I wanted to make them visible and important. I say this because sometimes when you think about gift economy, we go back to the traditional societies and communities and how people used to live before in I don't know how many hundreds of years, but the reality is that it is a very, very alive practice. If we just take time to notice how people do it and start computing every day what we do and what we give for free and how it makes the whole world actually move, because that's what we do.
I'm so glad you talk about the U.S. in those terms, because I was thinking this morning how materialist the U.S. society is in general, and that my mother, who passed away many years ago and I love dearly, but she had a very materialist view of the world. And I remember one time, and this is, you know, many decades ago, before we had heard of the guy who was last in the White House, me asking her who she looked up to the most in the world. And she said Donald Trump, because she was a New Yorker, and he was a New Yorker who had made lots of money and was very supposedly a successful businessman. And that's who was her role model. And I, at the time, had started reading some, I was in high school then, some more revolutionary books. And I said, my role model was Che Guevara. And as I got older and ended up living in Cuba, on my way to work, I would go by a bicycle and particularly go out of my way to go by a hospital that had a big sign on it with a quote from Che Guevara that said, "The life of one child is worth more than the wealth of the richest person on earth." Mm. And I thought that was so beautiful that I wanted to see it every day as I made my way to the office where I was working. So I'm glad, Kumba, that you remind me and us that there is this beautiful gift economy that is everywhere in the world. Sometimes you have to go out of your society to see it. And part of the reason for creating Global Exchange was to have people-to-people exchanges, have people like you, Kumba, come to the U.S. and people from the U.S. go outside of their bubble and see other parts of the world. And the first place we went was Haiti and the Dominican Republic. There are two stories I'll try to quickly tell. One was when we went to the Dominican Republic, we went to a small agricultural community, and they took us around and showed us their farms. And then in about 5 o'clock, we met in the community center, and they said, every Friday evening, we get together in what we call happy hour. And I'm thinking happy hour in the U.S. where you just, you know, drink and just have conversations. And we said, great. So we went in there, and the happy hour for them is that one by one, they would go around and each person would perform something that they had done themselves. So a poem they had written, a song they had made up, a tune on the guitar they wanted to share, some dance moves that they came up with, a joke that they came up with, anything that was might be entertaining to others, but showed their personal creativity. And they went around and each one had a beautiful thing to share. And then they turned to our group and they said to us, now it's your time. If you could go one by one and share something with us. And we all went like, what is that? And we had to huddle and try to help each other come up with something. And what we realized is how our culture was so commercial, and that the songs we knew were ones we heard on the radio, or the poems we, if we barely remembered them, were other people's poems, that we just didn't have that kind of creativity. And it was very embarrassing for us, but it made us all afterwards come together and really think about how we share, how we give to each other things that have no monetary value, but come from deep inside. And the other story I wanted to give was from that same trip, where we were in Haiti, and you know, a very poor country. And you know, Kevin, who I was married to at the time, And I got up early one morning before the group had any activities, and we went out and started walking. And two young Haitian boys started beckoning us to come with them. And so we started walking with them, and we were going up and up and up a hill. And we're thinking, oh, my God, where are they taking us? We don't have enough time. We start to get a little scared, and we're going up and up and up and up. And finally, we get up to the top of the hill, and it's just as the sun is rising. And it's this gorgeous view, this spiritual moment with the sun rising. And the boys were just there to smile and have us appreciate the beauty of the place where they lived. And so those are two examples that have stayed with many of us from that very first trip that show that you can give people things without monetary value on them, and that so much of life is about sharing what we love and what we can create or show as creations of nature.
Mm, thank you. Thank you so much, Medea, for sharing these stories.
On Wings, you're listening to Kumba Touré and Medea Benjamin. Kumba is speaking from Senegal and Medea from the United States. Their dialogue is part of a series of online events titled Maternal Gift Economy Breaking Through. The maternal gift economy, a term created by Genevieve Vaughn, is comprised of the free gifts of people and nature that are immeasurable in money and essential to life. The stories in this program are from a two-hour dialogue, free to watch, at maternalgifteconomymovement.org.
Gifts are in so many forms. I personally believe that, you know, some of the most precious gift really is the gift of time, the gift of presence in the communities where I've lived and where I'm from. That is what people have. Like when people are sad, when they're mourning, or when they're happy, what people do is be there, be present. If you have a party or a wedding or a baptism, something, people rarely comment about what the place was or what the food was like. Just, it was so great. There were so many people. Just the presence of people is the value of it. How many people spend time and sit and be there with you and give what they have the most precious, which is the time of our life that is basically limited. So the neighbors, if they hear the music, of course they'll come and dance and give their little part of whatever they can and go. And of course, there is a judgment about it in a modern society. Things are changing so fast in big cities. People want to show how much they have and how much they can accumulate. But the way someone is valued is how many links and diverse connection can they maintain. And that's how you say a person is a good person. Oh, this person is connected to many people because they will greet people on the street. They will go and see people when they are sick, etc. Those are small things, but people see the value. I just tell one story where I had a friend who came to visit in Mali, and she's from the US. And at the time, I believe she had picked up malaria or something. But when someone is not doing well, when you're feeling sick or depressed or you have some issues, that is the time people choose to actually be there and surround you. Like, they won't leave you alone, basically. it's very difficult to be left alone. And we didn't know that from where she came from, if you're not doing well, you basically want to hide until you get better, and then you are with people. So it was like the complete opposite. It was a very crazy situation where she would kind of move and go somewhere to isolate herself. And all of a sudden, the room would be full with people and children and everybody. And even if it's uncomfortable, people are just like, yeah, we are here. It's okay. You're sick or you're in pain. And Everybody goes through it. And well, that's part of that gift of presence that I wanted to really underline and say that it's something that I cherish.
It must be particularly hard during COVID for societies that are used to being communal to isolate people or to isolate yourself if you are sick and have a disease that can be passed on.
It's the most difficult. People have been speaking to this so much because a transmittable disease goes basically against the way people know to care. So what do you do? How do people even go through mourning? Because you're going to be sad and you know that there is a loss. But before, we all recognize together that this is part of life. Now, how do people go through mourning without the witnessing and you know, the touching, the holding each other and the being together? I think it's been the most difficult part of the COVID-19 for people here.
Back a little to this issue of the giving of time and the sharing of tasks. Could you talk a little bit about being a mother and how this gift economy comes into play in the day-to-day
yes.
work of mothering?
Yes, Madea, you've gone through this before me, so you can tell me your share about it too. And you know, I knew intellectually, and we always had this conversation about gift economy with Jen, you know, the maternal roots of it and how we learn about it and where it starts. And intellectually, of course, we knew it. But you practice it as a mother. You practice it as a person who cares for community. And we practice it as an activist, because to me, it's just different gradient of what we give and how we give. We realize that there is so much that we do as a gift for free. It is time, it is energy, it is thinking, it is design, it is imagination, it is everything that you could ever think about to make sure that somebody not only survives, but also thrives. And we learn things as we do it for little children. That is also what we try to do with our own communities, to try to make change happen. So there is no more counting of hours or anything. You just give and you just do what is needed. And of course, it is, you know, and we recognize again that the pillars on which actually the whole world stands is free work, mainly from women, but also from anybody who's like, care workers. Of course, COVID-19 helped us understand that, whether you take care of children, of elderly, or people who are sick or with disability, all of those actions that we do for our communities is what makes the rest of the world run and pretend that, you know, everything is for sale. But there is this whole hidden part that make it possible for anyone to sell anything.
That brings up to me a dilemma that I wanted to ask you about and how you deal with it in your activism, which is, in my years of doing work around social justice issues, there have been times where there is a conflict between doing this, it's hard to even say work, I mean, it's passion around helping the community, social justice, caring for the world, trying to stop war, loving the earth, and the dilemma that people have to earn income. And then you have what's often called the NGOization, the nonprofit world that has come to create job opportunities for people, but also then has a negative side in which sometimes it becomes a job more than a passion. So at, you know, 5 o'clock, your work is done and doesn't allow for enough involvement of the community. And some would say that it saps, it takes the most passionate activists and turns them into workers for an organization rather than community leaders that are organizing more naturally in the community. So I wonder how in your years of doing this work, if you've come across that as well, or is that more something that really affects us in wealthier countries where there are more of these NGOs?
Yes, I come across it and also we struggle with it. There is a dilemma, but I'll make the parallel with, for example, of course, we do all this care work for the children, for the house and everything. And of course, nobody pays for it. And you start thinking, if we were to fight for it to be recognized and for people to be paid for it, what would it do? Will we do it with the same passion, or will we start thinking, okay, you know, this is a job? And yes, there are people who do care work as a job, but they're still care workers and they're still giving that care. Because even when you are paid for it, there is a part of it that's just unpayable. That's the only word I could find. It doesn't matter how much somebody gives you, that care, that tenderness, that look, and the way you do this thing cannot be paid for. There is a part of it that comes only from you. I mean, except if they're going to make some robots to do them now. And I'll do that parallel also with the work of activism. Most people do it by passion and do it for free or for much less than what they could have made if they were somewhere else. And the truth is, if you are passionate about caring for the earth, as much as, you know, somebody can pay you, there is a part of it that is still your gift. And that gift is the choice you make to care. I think the choice we make to care is that part that is, you know, profoundly human. And of course, as soon as, you know, money comes in and certain structures come in, you have all kinds of things happening in all kinds of fields. And I am among maybe the one who, you know, I would say, yes, you know, if I could pay women for the work that they're doing in their house, taking care of their baby, I would do it. Their own baby, because they give birth to these kids and they take care of them for the whole world to benefit from. And nobody's ever, you know, looking at that. And if I can pay activists to do something that they would do for free, I'll pay them to do it also. But I know that there is a dilemma, and I know that there is a struggle there. But always we need to go back and recognize that paying doesn't do it and cannot make it happen. You know, you can't just put your money on the plate and eat it. You know, somebody need to pull that food together. and if they don't, the money doesn't transform itself into food.
Talking about caregiving, I had my first child when I was in Cuba, which is a society where people love children and they're always helping each other, looking out for each other. And I remember that from the time my child was born, the neighbors would be always coming in and taking her.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't think about, where is she? Is she being fed? Is she being cared for? What time are they bringing her back? It was just, you knew that there was just love in the community, and your child, like all the children, were well cared for. And then when I moved back to the US and had my second child here, I was alone. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, where is everybody? Where is everybody? And it's suddenly like this child was a burden to other people. I mean, not always, but in some spaces. Yes. It would not be great if the child was crying during an event.
Yes.
nobody would come over and grab the child and help you with it. They would be like looking at you like, don't you want to take that child out of here?
No, my dear, I like that, you know, example, because I did see that, at least in our communities and some of our houses, when you have a child, it's your own child, you know, that you gave birth to, you have to look for your child to get your kid, because the moment somebody see you with a child and like, oh, is this your child? And you say, yes, they pick it from you. Because the reasoning behind it is that it doesn't matter how much people help you and take the child, you'll remain with something to do for that child, because there will be a point where, well, you know, the child has to go, you know, if you're breastfeeding, you're the only one to do it. If they're sleeping with you, if they're sick and you have to take, I mean, they know that it doesn't matter. People can pick the child as much as they want. There will be enough to do for you. So that's the first instinct, is to first relieve the mother and make sure that you give a little time and a little share, because you know that there will be some more to do. And when I came to the US, you know, with my children, I was just like, how do people do this here? Let me just tell you one thing. This doesn't make sense. Nobody can take care of a child by themselves. And they're like, yes, 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 we do. I'm like, who? But the truth is, I looked at myself. I'm just like, how do women do this?
Imagine during COVID when your children are at home and you're supposed to be taking care of them and doing your work. In societies like these, where we're so compartmentalized and don't live in extended families for the most part.
That's why I talk about gift economy as a political practice, because in many ways, I would do it in a very unconscious way. It's just like, oh, that's how, what you do, and that's how life is. Or I benefited it without even knowing that it was there or important, because it's just there. Everybody does it. So how do you know? It's only as you grow up, I guess, you learn, you read, and you travel. You're just like, oh, wait a minute, not everybody does this. And, you know, we're losing this when we are in the cities, or when you are in certain setting, it doesn't happen anymore. And then you see like the value of this gift economy, how it helps people stay sane. Because I know a lot of people would be gone completely mad if there was not this circular gift economy way.
Those were some of the stories told by Kumba Touré and Madea Benjamin when they joined the online series Maternal Gift Economy Breaking Through in April 2021. You can find the video of their entire discussion and the rest of this ongoing series at the website maternalgifteconomymovement.org. That's all one word, maternalgifteconomymovement.org. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org or visit our website wingsradio.org/WordPress. Wings thanks our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose books include The Maternal Roots of the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frida Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.